You're listening to episode 71 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. You can't win them all, though I'm not sure why not. I want to talk about driverless cars, because this is awesome. So
I'm going to go first.
Okay, go for it.
Because what I saw, this article was actually done... Oh, they updated it. I was going to say this article is from like 11 months ago, but apparently it's from yesterday. No. Wait. No, it is from a year ago, from March 1st, 2012. That's a year ago, huh? Because we're in 2013 now, aren't we? Because the Mayans were wrong. All right. Never mind. It is from a year ago. A year ago on, what is this? The Atlantic Cities. Place matters. They wrote an article called What Intersections Would Look Like in a World of Driverless Cars.
That's terrifying. I'm watching the video right now.
Yeah, so basically on this website, which if you go to furloughbros.com, I'll have the link there. It will be called What Intersections Would Look Like in a World of Driverless Cars. Just click on it, scroll down a little bit, and there's a Vimeo video there. That is this basically these researchers from wherever they're from, they were like, you know, if you have robots driving cars, you don't really need stoplights or stop signs, and you know, there's a lot more efficient way to do it. But basically having a central robot controlling the intersection, communicating with all of the individual vehicles, and it can figure out the most efficient way to have them all go without crashing. And so they show it's like the simulation is very like it's 2D. There's, you know, solid colors where it has little ants driving around in lines. And it shows them all going through how many lanes? It's four lanes on each side.
It's an 8 lane intersection.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's huge. So normal intersections are not this big, but it just shows you how complicated it could handle it. Where there are literally, at any given time, there could be 10 cars in an intersection all going in different directions and not hitting each other because the computer's smart enough to know, oh, you should slow down, you should speed up, oh, you should approach at this speed, oh, you're turning, okay, now go. And, you know, keep you slowly rolling until then. And so they show this video, and you're just like, Their whole point is, like, if it's computers, you don't care. And they were saying that it could probably do it all at a speed that would freak us out.
You know, 60 miles per hour. Yep. Well, because it knows where you're going. I mean,
calculated. Yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh, that's kind of awesome, yet totally scary. I don't know if I'd want to drive through it, but... That's a very cool feature. Future, where we're just making cars more efficient. No big deal. Don't worry about it.
What's interesting and what's difficult about that really is that it requires a completely autonomous cars. It requires every car to be on the path to intelligence. And unfortunately, like, that's one of the big hurdles. It's like a lot of the cool efficiency. There's no reason why cars can't go 200 miles per hour on the free. Well, there are actually reasons why they can't. But there's no reason why cars can't go 110 on the freeways if they're controlled by cars and still be exceedingly safe compared to human drivers.
Let's talk a little bit more about that timing then.
Yes. So the big question on a lot of this, and you know, we get super stoked about this sort of stuff because it's cool technology, is the driverless cars and especially Google's driverless cars, because they're the forerunners right now. Although they're not built into forerunners, they're built into Priuses.
And they're also not sold anywhere.
Right.
Does that count as a forerunner if you're literally not selling anything, but there are other ones like Lexus out there who actually are selling driver assist cars?
Yeah, I see, but it's different. Count? Driver assist aren't. It's different. It's different.
I'm just checking. I don't know. Dude, I'll be honest. Lexus is cruise control and lane stabilization.
Yeah.
I would get a Lexus. I am typically not a Lexus car fan, but for those particular features, I could figure out how to drive one, you know, how to put up with that brand, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you. It's pretty cool.
P.S. It would be like Jaguar if I had a choice.
Yeah, of
just
course.
Just thought I would clarify that.
I want a Tesla, but that's me.
Ooh, it's cause, I could do that too.
That's because I like Elon Musk and I trust him with my life.
Yeah, that's right.
So Google's $1 trillion car, driverless cars, part three, sooner than you think. So Forbes has been doing this big article, that multi-feature article, like five, it's like, it's long, and they're doing like five different things. They're basically doing a long-term journalistic piece on what is the deal with Google's cars. And it's really fascinating. They're not wired long. They're a little bit long, but they're not crazy.
Wired likes to write long articles.
Yes, they do. But the first one was kind of like an introduction to it, and it's like, why would Google's driverless cars be worth a trillion dollars? Why would it be, you know, is it really worth that much? And then the next article, or the next section thing that they did another article on the ripple effect. And then they got six parts coming on this. And let's talk about why Google will be profitable, how the automakers are going to be affected, and different stuff like that. It's interesting.
Sooner than you think.
Yeah.
Good answer.
So the question that they ask in this particular
I could think pretty quick.
Yeah.
So
what's interesting about this, and actually they talk about this is a great article. It really was. I actually really highly recommend.
Oh my gosh! They think the car will cost $300,000.
No! That's how much they cost right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what they're saying is the cars cost $300K to the Prius, after the Prius with all the current technology, to build these original test cars, they cost $300. Now that's incredibly expensive and can't be incorporated. But basically they argue that this is all going to be affected by Moore's Law, and you know, and just like the original, a gigabyte of memory in the, like, in 1981 cost $300,000. Less than a decade later, it was less than a decade after that, it was $10. And now it's 10 cents today for a gig, of memory. So in three decades, it went
from 10 cents, really? Really?
Yeah, if you a jump drive, or especially if you're talking just the chip, the gigabyte chip, not soldered into a jump drive, that's how much they cost. They're unbelievably inexpensive.
All right, fair enough.
And so,
what is this?
So
customers wouldn't buy it? Are you kidding me?
What?
There's a widespread sense that most customers would never give up their spot in the driver's seat.
Would you let me? Oh, I'm sorry. So basically what these guys are jumping all around the article. So basically what they're asking the question is like, how long will this, getting. And so the first thing that they talk about, and I thought this was pretty cool, was like, they're talking about the fact that, you know, when you track technological change, there's that classic Moore's Law, graph where it's parabolic, it just accelerates, that change happens. But then they talk about how, like, social, political, and business systems tend to change incrementally, or linearly rather.
Yes.
And they don't have a really fast slope. And what they said was that really truly disruptive technologies, they basically occur when the technological movement has gotten so at first the technological movement moves slower than social, political, business systems. Then eventually at some point they meet, and by the time they meet, technology is on such a rapid increase that it'll just start accelerating even further and further, that and you'll start to get a gap between them at ever increasing moments. And basically what they say is that it acts like a rubber band, that technology finally gets so much further ahead of every other social, political, and business change that it changes so dramatic that at some point it just does a massive recorrect on how societies move. And so
this graph is not big enough then, because I would like to see that played out and then see where we are in the current curve.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think this is more of a hypothetical graph. It's not doesn't have any numbers behind it. And you know, they're talking, but they're, you know, they're using computers and tablets and phones as a as an example of, like, you know, it's like the shift to smartphones really, you know, was extraordinarily slow until you had this huge gap where the technology had, you really and truly, you know, like the smartphones, you know, the iPhone. Why did everybody start buying smartphones when the iPhone came out? Well, it's because the technology Well, that's exactly what it is. Technology had finally gotten so far ahead of the social demographics that people finally snapped to it and caught back up, and now we're back onto an incremental change over time. And so basically what they're saying is, like, that's what you're going to have to expect for cars. So what does this actually look like? And they made a statement about the fact that I thought this is cool that there's a – so, you know, they talk about, like, the direction of going – you know, the direction of how we get there, where are we going. And they say we're going to lay out the path, and what we need you to understand is that there's a big difference between a clear course and a short distance. So basically what they're saying is there's a clear set of steps that's going to get us there. That doesn't necessarily mean it's fast.
Really waiting for you to do, like, the Matrix line. There's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path.
not exactly. So what they're saying is, like, they're actually kind of like, in the article, it sounds like they're trying to say, don't act like this is going to happen in the next 5 years. Although it's clearly going to happen, the timing is going to take a bit of time for a lack of a non-redundant term. But at the same time, there will get a point where the cost for this and the technological advantages of it are so huge that you'll overcome a lot of the incrementally changing things, like people trusting the cars. And they get into the idea, like, yeah, you know, well, consumers don't want to give up their seat in the driver's seat. That idea of, well, what happens if I have a blue screen of death in my car? Do I get to die along with it? You know, that's going to go away because younger generations tend to trust technology, and so younger generations will be cool with it. And as the older generations, like your baby boomers, start to become, they can't drive anymore for medical reasons, this will be a huge advantage. And so they talk about how it'll actually get into it'll start to propagate into society through these different venues as a trustworthy technology, and on both scales, both ends of the social age scale. They talk about how this article is huge, so I'm just going to kind of encapsulate a couple of different things. They talk about how there's way too much liability in it, and because one of the big problems that people have is, it's like, if the car does crash and kills a person in the car person wasn't driving, the car was driving itself, well, who's responsible? Was it the person driving, or was it the person who made the car? Well, obviously. So it's, you know, like, that's a, you know, they talk about how, like, that's one big problem. They get a little bit into I opened that question up, and they actually had an interesting where did it go? I should have highlighted this, but they get into the idea of, it's like, you know, planes can take off and they fly in it. You put pilots into the pilot seat, and we actually have legal mechanisms to deal with that sort of thing and move the liability around, so it's not just the manufacturers and the automakers and basically put the liability back in the hands of the consumers, which is not completely unreasonable in a lot of cases. But one of the big things they talk about is that these cars tend to be so exceedingly safe that was the other thing. That was their argument, was these cars so far have proven to be so exceedingly safe over general drivers that the actual total liability on a lot of these things will go down. And so if we as consumers have to pay more in order to pay for the liability of these technologies. We basically have to pay a higher premium on the car because they have a higher liability for the companies. In the end, there will be less liability in general, as fewer people will be dying, that the actual cost for the entire industry goes down, and then we as individuals will be paying. The argument was that from a cost perspective, yeah, at first it could be a problem, but over the long term, as long as you don't have like a single accident that wipes out of 3,000 people, yeah. It'll save you money in the long run. And they talked about how, like, you know, in America, you can't force consumers to adopt these, but, you know, China can, and they might want to, because there's huge benefits to traffic and to environmental problems, things that they're currently having difficulties with. This is a really good solution.
I'm just saying, man, there are big benefits to having a benevolent dictator.
But I
wouldn't want to live under one. Let's just be, you know, totally honest. But I get it.
For clarity's sake. But what it could really do is it could really boost the entire, you know, the entire economy. As you figure out how to make them and how to sell them and how to, you know, it accelerate.
It frees up capital to work somewhere else, which I thought was really interesting about this one quote that they had talking about how it'll violate current business models. Said that it's not Google that will sell this technology to consumers. It is auto manufacturers. And sadly, no auto manufacturer will sell a technology that will decrease the number of times cars are wrecked and that will make it easier to share cars. Except I don't know what are they like legally required to include ABS brakes? And I don't know. You look at what Lexus is doing, where it's helping with, you know, does some of that driver assist stuff, doesn't that decrease accidents?
Lexus's are stupid expensive.
Well, and that'll probably end up being, you know, that's how they'll make up for it, is you
right.
will see a rise in the cost of these cars.
But your cars will cost...
Go down.
Yeah, your cars will cost less over time because you don't need to buy as many cars because fewer of them get wrecked. One of the interesting things that they did point out was
so what's the time frame? Let's cut
to the chase.
What's the prediction?
So they actually say that this is statistically true, that America's fleet of cars overturns in about 10 to 15 years.
Wow.
It, you know, it depends on the decade. Yeah, I didn't realize we went through that many cars. But every about 10 to 15 years, you know, with the exception of a small group of quote-unquote classic cars, all cars are new cars every 10 to 15 years.
Count as one of those?
Yes, exactly. And so what you're looking at is you're looking at this fact that you're looking at a market that really and truly you won't have a completely autonomous set of cars until you get to, you know, until you get to there's at least a 15-year window that it'll take. Once you get to the point where all cars have it and no new cars are sold without it, it'll take 15 years. So at most 10 years at least. At that point, so how long will it take us to get to that point? It could take another decade, really and truly, to get the price down.
I just want to know, when can I buy one? I feel like you're answering a different question here.
Oh, I'm getting close. I think you'll be able to buy one a consumer grade one in 5 years.
Really?
I think in 10 to 15
years.
Well,
that's sooner than I think, so okay.
Yeah. I think in 10 to 15 years, but they're going to be expensive. They're going to be built into luxury car. Luxury cars.
Totally.
They're going to be built into
$40,000 to $50,000 minimum.
Right. At least. And I think what you'll find after that is you'll find in 10 to 15 years, you'll actually see them come down to the point where all consumer cars can afford to have this technology built into it. And then 10 years after that, you'll be a crazy maniac. If you drive your own car, you'll have to have a special license where you're like super tested and you can actually coexist on the road with these exceedingly safe automated drivers. And you'd have to be an idiot like Will Smith in the movie iRobot if you don't trust your computer card, which drives me nuts because he was glorified for not trusting it. I don't understand why they made that movie. It just drives me crazy. Every time I think about that movie, It's fun, but he is glorified as he's the only sane one in this world of crazy people. When it's like, that's not how it, but everybody else lives a better life because they trust these technological systems.
Right up until the point where the computers take over the world.
Come on. Because that's a major concern. You know, he had the better chance of surviving. I realize the girl's life may have been more valuable and the robot should have tried to save the girl's life instead of his, but frankly, we wouldn't necessarily program robots that way. If we felt as a society that the little girl should be saved, even if she has less chance, we would do that. It's ridiculous, man. Will Smith is ridiculous. I can't blame him. I blame the writers.
Fair enough.
Goodness gracious. It's such a cool story. And they just... Anyways, it's really cool. So 30 years. 30 years. That's my prediction.
I'm making that prediction. 30 years,
almost nobody will be driving a non-automated car.
But I can buy one in 5.
You can buy your first super expensive ones in 5. And I'm talking 100K plus.
Take an additional 25 years.
Yes.
For its turnover.
For every car to have it.
All right.
Because it'll take another 10 years before Hondas are, you know, Honda Accords are built with it.
5 years.
And then it's 10 years after that, you know.
Well, I don't want to buy another car for 5 years. I wouldn't mind waiting 10. So maybe that would work out for me. Okay. Fair enough. Cool.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Very cool. And then we can have crazy traffic.
Woo!
Cop. Not cop, but, you know. Handling algorithms, which would be very cool.
Yeah.